Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 227, Cast Iron with Ashley Jones. Everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. And today, in a few minutes, I'm going to be welcoming to the show Ashley Jones, who has a new book coming out the week that this episode is dropping called Skillet Heads, A Guide to Collecting and Restoring Cast Iron Cookware. She also has another book that she wrote before Skillet Heads, called Modern Cast Iron, The Complete Guide to Selecting, Seasoning, Cooking, and More. So Ashley's a great resource on the topic of cast iron cookware. So excited to talk to her about that here in a few minutes. Before we get to that, though, of course, a couple of items of housekeeping. First and foremost, the show notes for this episode will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/227. Again, that's kitchencounterpodcast.com/227. The show notes will have links to some things that Ashley and I discuss, like links to her blog and her book and some other cast iron related items. It also has links to my social media and the Nitty Grits Network out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, of which the Kitchen Counter Podcast is a member. But that's a network of shows about food, drink, and culture. So go check that out at southernfood.org to get more on Nitty Grits. Also, if you'd like to send me an email directly, you can do that to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Love to hear from you. If you have any questions about this particular episode, any other episode, or ideas for some show topics for the future, please send an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. That would be awesome. Well, I don't know about where you live, but where I live here in Oregon, it has been a long winter. I feel like it is never ending. As I record this, it's the end of April. And I think for the month of April, I'd have to look it up, but we're, I don't know, triple our rainfall amount or something crazy like that. We haven't had any warm days except for the last couple of days. We finally cracked 70 degrees and the sun came out and it's been so awesome. It was just in time for a Saturday market run down here where I live. It's a farmer's market, but it's not just produce. It's all sorts of stuff. I probably should have hid my credit card and my money away before I went down there or set a budget or something because I did go a little bit crazy. I went down to the Saturday market. I have to tell you what I came back with. I bought smoked salmon. I bought some sausages. I stopped at the hummus stop and bought a few tubs of hummus, some sun-dried tomato feta cheese. I got some donuts from the Dough Hook. I'm trying to think what else I bought. I bought a bunch of stuff. Produce-wise, I found some leeks, some radishes, and I picked up some rhubarb. So all in all, it was a good day, a good sunny, warm day, really fun to go down to the Saturday market. I'm really getting excited. You know, right now it's the early spring produce here in Oregon, so we don't have any berries or anything like that. So I'm really looking forward to in a month when we have cherries and berries, you know, starting around in June. Oh, it's going to be amazing. So it's what I needed to break out of my long winter funk. Unfortunately, now we're kind of back to 50 degree days and overcast and kind of drizzly, but I know it won't be forever. So I hope wherever you're at, you're getting out, you're getting a little bit of sunshine. Hopefully the weather's not being too weird. It's been a long, weird weather winter for a lot of us, I know. But spring is here. It's time to get a hold of some new ingredients, get in the kitchen, cook some things that you haven't been able to cook for months, and kind of refresh your outlook, maybe clean out your pantry. Refresh your kitchen outlook, your cooking outlook as we head into spring and get ready as the weather warms up. Maybe you need to go outside and clean up your grill. I did that this weekend too. So lots of opportunities for us to break out of our home cooking ruts here, right around the corner. So if it's been a long winter for you and you're tired of making the same dishes over and over again, start flexing your recipe muscles, because we're going to have a lot of new fresh produce coming into the stores and into the markets really soon. And I am here for it. But I'm getting way off on a tangent here. I don't want to keep you waiting any longer. I want to bring Ashley in, and we're going to talk about cast iron. Now, I mentioned at the top of the show, Ashley has a couple of books. Her first book on cast iron cookery was Modern Cast Iron, The Complete Guide to Selecting, Seasoning, Cooking, and More. If you need a really good baseline, comprehensive foundation for, you know, if you're a home cook and you're into cast iron, this will be a great book to get hold of because it covers all of the basics. The second book on cast iron that Ashley has written and is actually coming out now is called Skillet Heads, A Guide to Collecting and Restoring Cast Iron Cookware. That also has some great information on general cast iron, but that's probably more geared for if you want to go to your thrift stores or your flea markets or your estate sales, or you want to find some other cast iron manufacturers around the United States to get some pieces from. This will be a great book for those sorts of folks. Now, it's not a price guide, so it's not for like hardcore collectors of vintage pieces, but the way she explains it in our conversation, it's really for people who want to go find some pieces, maybe fix them up, or you know, try to find the right pieces for their cooking in their kitchen at these various places. So over the last few years, Ashley has talked to a ton of cast iron collectors and manufacturers. She's gone really deep into the subject, so she's really a great resource to talk cookware, to talk cast iron cookware, rather. So I'm excited to have her on the show. In our conversation here, we touch some of the basics. Which pieces do you need in your kitchen as a home cook? How do you care for your cast iron? That sort of stuff. We touch a little bit on the history too. But I think if you don't know anything about cast iron, you're going to come out of this with a lot more knowledge. If you're already somebody who enjoys cast iron cookware, then you'll feel right at home with this conversation already. So without further ado, let's talk to Ashley Jones, author of Skillet Heads, A Guide to Collecting and Restoring Cast Iron Cookware. All right, Ashley, thanks for being here. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to stop by and talk cast iron with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This is wonderful.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. I think I mentioned to you a few minutes ago, I've been trying to get a couple other cast iron sources. I think I even reached out to Lodge. It's been a while, honestly, but I'm sure they get a million requests and I just haven't been able to line anything up. And but this opportunity came around. I think it's awesome. I really am excited to talk to you. You have a new book out. We're going to talk about a little bit, but you actually have two books out, maybe more, but I know of two books that are cast iron centric. And I thought maybe we could have a fun little conversation about cast iron in the kitchen today.
Yes.
If that works for you.
That's right. Not just one book, but two books on cast iron cookware. There's a lot to be said on that topic. Yes.
Yeah. A long history too of cast iron. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? Why am I talking to you about cast iron? What's your cast iron genesis or origin story? And then we can go from there. Maybe we can get into some common cast iron topics or questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I am a home cook. So I am not a chef. I'm not trained in a culinary school or anything like that. I am a home mom, and I had some health issues, and my mom said one day, you know, those nonstick skillets can kill birds. And I said, what? That is the most weirdest thing I've ever heard. And she said, yeah, those chemical nonstick pans like Teflon, they emit a gas in the air, chemicals in the air that can kill pet birds. So I trust my mom. I've learned that over the years. You should always believe your mom. But I still looked it up, and it's true. And back in the day, it was called Teflon toxicosis or Teflon flu. People would get sick when they used Teflon pans. And if they had pet birds, they would often die. And so Teflon changed one of the chemicals that they use in the manufacture of the pan. It was PFOA, and they removed that, but they replaced it with a chemical that is in the same chemical family. And so we don't know much about that, and we don't know really the effects of that. And so that was kind of an awakening moment for me. I immediately threw out everything that had chemical nonstick coating. You know, I had already gone down the journey of changing my food and eating healthier and just trying to be healthy. And then I said, well, wow, I'm killing myself with my cookware, and I didn't even know it. So I got rid of the Teflon stuff, and my mother-in-law had given me some beautiful cast iron pans. She always cooks in cast iron. They're just, I don't know how many she has. She just takes them out from under the cabinet. They breed under there, and she just takes them out, and they're, you know, they're beautiful and ready to go. And she cooks everything in it. And so she gave me two beautiful pans that had been in the family, and they had restored them. And I started falling in love with it, but I didn't know what to do with it. And so when I got rid of my Teflon, I said, well, I guess I'll figure it out. And so I kind of challenged myself at that point to make everything in cast iron. And that was just a personal goal for me. I needed the iron. I found out that you can get iron from eating in cast iron, and I needed that. And I wanted to be healthy. I wanted our family to be healthy. So we started with that. And I'm an author. And when it came time to pitch an idea for a book, I was talking with Indiana University, and they have all these amazing books on cooking. And I said, gosh, you know, you don't have anything on cast iron skillets. You know, what about the history and how they're used and cleaning and caring for them and all the stuff I had been researching for myself for like 2 years. And they're like, yeah, that'd make a great book. Let's do that. So that is the long and short of how it all came about. So it's a matter of personal research over a number of years. And once you start writing a book, you really dig into things a lot deeper than you probably would otherwise. And so I wrote Modern Cast Iron. That came out in 2020. And I said, okay, that's it. That was the book. And I got so much feedback, and I made so many connections online that I realized that there was this whole other world of cast iron that involved collecting and restoring cast iron. And I started seeing the chemistry behind it, like how it's done and why they use these really strange methods. And it was very intriguing. So I said, well, let's write a book about that. So that became Skillet Heads, and Skillet Heads releases May 2nd of this year, 2023. And so both books have lots of recipes, lots of information from manufacturers, and we can dig into that. But they both have their own goal. And so there's something for everybody, for sure.
So as I understand it, the Skillet Heads, the second book that you just mentioned, is really for the collector or somebody who's interested in restoring cast iron, and the Modern Cast Iron is really geared probably towards like your, it's like, what do you need to know about using cast iron in your kitchen? And that's that book.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's pretty fair. Now, I will say, when people say collecting cast iron, we think of hoarding, you know, 100 pieces hanging on the wall. Sure. And, you know, the restorers that I talk to, that's what they have. They have hundreds of pieces that they're like, these are my daily pieces. Okay. I don't know how you're using all of them daily. I want to come to your house and eat with you. But, you know, that's what they do. But when I say collecting, I really mean getting the right pieces for your home. So that could be 4 pieces. It could be 5 pieces. But it should be the right pieces that you're comfortable with, and that you can cook what you want to cook on them. And, you know, so I think you wanted to kind of touch base on, you know, what's the what exactly should people have in their home? And I think that kind of question bleeds from Modern Cast Iron into Skillet Heads, because I didn't know this, that most of the manufacturers, the brands that you would buy today from modern companies, are not available in stores. And so Skillet Heads introduces those manufacturers to the customer. I actually interviewed the founders. I talked with them about how they got to where they are and what they're doing and why they're doing it and how is their cast iron different. And then I compared the 10-inch skillets from each company by cost and weight and seasoning to help people figure out if they just want to buy one skillet, it's $150 or so if it's a modern company. So it kind of helps you pick that investment and know that you're getting what you want out of it. And then the recipes come from those contributors, which I think is really cool. You kind of get a better idea of their flavor because they're from all over the country.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Actually, I was struck by that. Mm-hmm. Again, I said before we record, I'm not a cast iron expert. I've got some pieces.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize how many manufacturers there were. And some of them are very boutique, right? They're very small operations, all the way up to the Lodge, which is probably the most well-known. And maybe you can correct me, but probably the largest manufacturer in the country, I'm guessing.
I would say
maybe,
so.
Volume-wise.
Yeah, volume-wise. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was struck by the fact that there were so many manufacturers, foundries, whatever we call them, of cast iron in the United States. So that was kind of cool. And I really actually, this is a small rabbit hole, a small tangent, but so years ago, I went to school to be an archaeologist. That was my vocation way back when. And I know this sounds very left field, but I did a lot of historic sites archaeology. So there's two types of archaeology in the United States. You could broadly categorize them. One is prehistoric, anything before anything written, right? Yeah. And then there's historic sites archaeology, which is archaeology of eras that have a written record, like homesteading and pioneers, yeah, and even, anything 50 years ago, yeah, could be archaeological. Anyway, we had this really cool book called Bottle Makers and Their Marks, and it was this compendium of glass bottleware, and it went into incredible detail on how they're made, what to look for on the bottom, the different manufacturing marks to help date them. And I had a real, flashback when I was looking through your book, because you have a lot of that with the cast iron manufacturers. Like, here's the bottom of this, old. And you also have manufacturers that are no longer in business, right? So if you're thrift storing or flea marketing or garage sailing, you might come across some of these and you kind of lay out, here's what to look for, and you can figure out when and where it was made. I thought that was really cool.
I think it's neat too. And I don't know what it is about people like us that find that stuff interesting, but we just do. It's how people made stuff and why they made it that way. And half the time it was better then than it is now. So what was it that made it so unique and so durable that you can still dig it out of the ground today? I think all that's fascinating. And there are specialty books for people who are wanting to get into the vintage. They're called the Red and the Blue books, and it's the Wagner and Griswold book. And then there's the Griswold and Wagner book, and they're by the same authors. And there's just a ton of information out there for identification. And I did not even attempt to replicate any of that because that is its own thing.
Oh, I'm sure it would be a massive.
Oh, there's no way. There's no way. And that's not my skill set anyway. I mean, the people who have done that have really documented history by showing us what was made when and then how those brands changed over time. So those resources are out there for folks who do like to do the scavenger hunt at the flea market. And so I referenced that in the book, that here's some resources that you would need. You need guides like that for sure to know what kind of value you're looking at. So I just kind of took the top of that and gave you some of the most recognizable brands and manufacturers, the ones that you might see the most. And I showed you one good picture of one of their pans, or the most recognizable brand. There's an Erie skillet that has a spider on it. And it's just crazy. The first time I saw it, I thought, why would you want to eat something off that has a spider on the bottom of your skillet? That's awful, And then I found out that skillets used to be called spiders. So, and if we have some older folks listening, they're probably shaking their head right now because they're like, yep, my grandma called it a spider, But back then they had legs and a really long arm on it. You stuck it in the hearth, and that's why it was called a spider, because it looked like one. And then the legs came off and the handle came off because you were going to use it on a stove then, not on a hearth. So, you know, cast iron is really cool because you're talking about history. And a lot of times, you know, our age, we're talking about our grandma's history, our great grandma's history. So it's pretty close to home still.
Yeah. Okay. I fear we would go way deep into that rabbit hole. So we better shift gears, but that's really fun to touch on that historic aspect. You alluded to it. Let's talk about like a cast iron for a home cook. So yeah. Now I'm not a cast iron connoisseur. I like cast mm-hmm. iron. I have a few pieces. I think I have a 10-inch skillet. Mm-hmm. I have an enameled, a couple of enameled Dutch ovens. I have a couple Dutch ovens that I take camping, you know, the three-legged, you know, 8 and a 10 quart or whatever they are. And then I think I have somewhere, I have a griddle. And then I think I have like a grill pan, you know, with the raised, you know, that kind of thing.
That's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, now I don't use, I use the skillet the most and the mm-hmm. enamel Dutch mm-hmm. ovens the most. Mm-hmm. Most of the other stuff I don't get out all that much, but that might be too much. I don't know. What do you think a typical home cook who, you know, is maybe trying to cook dinner most mm-hmm. nights a week or whatever, mm-hmm. what kind of cast iron? Well, maybe the first question is why would they want cast iron? And you talked a little bit about it. You talked a little bit about like the Teflon stuff.
Yeah.
But like one question I have, I also like stainless steel mm-hmm. cookware. Mm-hmm. So tell me, what can a cast iron skillet do that my same size stainless steel skillet can't do very well?
Okay, so stainless steel, first of all, I'll say, because we did talk about the health part, stainless steel is a pretty healthful cookware. It does leach a little bit of chromium and magnesium, but it's extremely small amount. If you're allergic to those, though, that small amount could be a problem. So it's just something to be aware of. You can use stainless steel a lot of the ways that you can use cast iron. I think your biggest differences are going to be the output. So, for instance, if you make cornbread in cast iron, you're going to get a very different cornbread than if you made it in stainless steel. You're not going to get the crunch on the outside and that nice kind of gooiness on the inside. The other thing is cast iron is heavy, and that's actually a good thing because it aids in the heat retention. And so when you are trying to sear a steak and you put it on the stove and you've got it nice and hot and you drop that steak on it, in cast iron, the temperature's not going to drop measurably. That skillet's going to stay just as hot, and it's going to sear that steak perfectly, and you're going to have it just the way you want it. You put it in stainless steel, and it's going to drop the temperature. That is what I have read is the biggest complaint from chefs, is the temperature drop, because stainless steel is just not going to retain that heat. For us, maybe especially down south, we also like the flavor of cast iron. It does lend a flavor after a while. And depending on if you're making greens or beans or something like that, it does taste different than if you cook in something else.
And I suppose, I don't think I heard you say this, but or maybe I missed it, but you know, stainless steel has virtually no non-stick properties at all.
Oh, that's right? Unless absolutely. You're cooking
extremely high heat, you might be able to replicate it. Like your steak won't stick, but you can't fry an egg in stainless steel and expect to get it out in one piece most of the time.
That's right. And cast iron's non-stickability, which I think that should be a word. I've used that as a word, non-stickability. It is created with that seasoning that you develop on there. So it is not a chemical. It's not something that is going to hurt you. It is simply oil that is heated and it forms a polymer layer that bonds to the iron. So that's something that increases the more you cook with it. It's something that, you know, develops over time. And that's what makes cast iron valuable, because the more you use it, the better it is, which is very unusual for any product.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a good overview, I think, of why. And then, so let's talk about pieces. So let me challenge you, and I know this would be an impossible question for you. It's probably like picking a child or something, or a favorite pet, but if you could only have one cast iron piece in your kitchen, what would you go with?
So I actually took that challenge for Modern Cast Iron because I wrote that book from a minimalist standpoint with the intention of helping home cooks get the most out of it at the least cost and the least fuss, you know, how to do it the easiest and the cheapest. And so I would say for most people, especially if you have a family, go with a 12-inch skillet, and you can get it from Lodge for like $30. You can get that at Target. Walmart sometimes may have it. Specialty stores. I mean, even certain gas stations, you can get a Lodge skillet. And I know the 10-inch is $25, I think. So you're looking at like $30. In Target, you can even get it with a silicone hand holder. It comes with it. So it's a good deal. Lodge is known for being the most economical brand. And they have been around since 1896. They have learned how to automate cast iron cookware. When you get it, it's black, which means it is seasoned. You can wipe it out, make sure it's as clean as you want it to be, and then use it. And just keep using it, and it'll stay in good condition.
And it's pretty wild to think, really, in today's world of like expensive kitchen, you know, equipment, for $30, you can get an excellent quality light, I mean, something that will last multiple lifetimes if you take care of it. That is a deal that I'm not shilling for Lodge or any other cast. But I mean, that's kind of unbelievable deal.
Yeah, it really is. And even the other manufacturers I talked to, they were giving kudos to Lodge. Like, we have cast iron today because Lodge kept it going. They were able to get through wars and depressions and recessions and everything else. And they did it by making it economical. So you really have to, you know, give hats off to a company that can accomplish that and provide a good product. Now, I do have several pieces of Lodge. I use them for different things. A lot of times people will say, well, it's not as lightweight as my grandma's pan was or my mom's pan was. It has more texture to it than I like in the older pans. So people who start comparing it to the vintage pans will often decide that they want to go ahead and upgrade their cast iron. Now, again, you can still use Lodge, but the modern stuff is different. And so that's why I went into detail with the different companies about what exactly makes them different. So some of them are lighter weight. A lot of them are CNC machined on the inside, so they're smooth. They have different pour spouts or different handles, and you know, even Lodge has so many different styles now. It's amazing. So you have a lot of options out there, but what you're looking at is a jump from like a $30 pan to like a $140 pan. Even so, again, it's still cast iron. There's nothing that's going to wear out, fall apart. It's going to last you long enough to pass it down to kids and grandkids. All you have to do is just take care of it.
Yeah. And I want to talk about the taking care of it part in a second, because I think that's critical that people understand that it's not quite plug and play. Maybe that's
a little analogy. Different.
It's a little especially different. But I don't want to get there quite yet, because I want to just circle back really quick. You just explained also, I think, and we've been talking about like the durability of cast iron. I mean, $30 is pretty reasonable, but going to like garage sales and looking for a good, or estate sales and looking for a good piece of cast iron is usually a pretty good bet, because unless you're really a hardcore restorer and you're looking for a big rusty chunk of something, that's one thing. But if you're going to like an estate sale, it's not usually a bad bet to look for cast iron, because you could probably get a good deal and you'll probably get really good pieces. So that's also another place, right, for a home cook if they're looking to maybe add another skillet or a Dutch oven or something. That's a way to
absolutely
go too.
Absolutely. I think I mentioned that modern cast iron. I go into more detail in skillet heads, because it is good if you can find one that's in good condition or already been restored. And then you end up with, you know, you could get vintage quality for very, very little money. The restorers I talk to actually sell the pieces that they restore. So you can also, there's this whole market out there. You can go to Etsy, you can go to eBay, and you can find individuals who are actually companies that that's what they do. They find old rust buckets, they restore them, and they sell them. And so you can find these people, and I've listed several of them in the book, where they have inventory. And so you can pick out the one you want and pay a reasonable price for something that's a little bit of history to it.
So let's talk about the care and feeding of cast iron, if you will. So I remember when I was a Boy Scout, and that's the first place I ever learned really to use like a cast iron Dutch oven, because we had one that we took along. And I remember the Scoutmaster being like so stinking strict about that cast iron, like how to clean it, you know, how to wipe it down with oil, whatever it is, right? And before we could put that thing away, it had to be like, we'd inspect it, had to be cleaned up perfectly. For reasons that I'm sure you'll explain, but it's very different from like a stainless steel pan where you just throw it in the sink, little Dawn, scrub it, clean it, dry it, put it away. Right. That's a little lower maintenance, if you will. But what is it about cast iron that makes it so finicky? And maybe I'm being unfair. Those are bad ways to describe it, but I mean, finicky is not a bad description. If you're a home cook who's never used it, it would be different.
It can feel finicky. So the difference is cast iron is cast. So it is iron that it would be too brittle to be rolled or to be formed in another way. So you have to be careful of a couple things. One, breaking it. Don't drop it on the tile floor. Odds are you'll break the tile, but Butterpat Industries actually got started when the owner dropped his skillet down a flight of stairs and decided to remake it and started a whole company. So it is possible to drop and break an old skillet. They do get more brittle, not more brittle over time, but just, I mean, the iron itself has a brittle quality to it. The seasoning aspect. So here's the thing, because it is iron, you have this whole chemical process with seasoning. And I kind of alluded to that a second ago, where seasoning is oil that is heated. It forms this polymer layer using this strange chemical process. It's very similar to the way they make plastics, but this is natural using oil. And because it's iron, it partially bonds to that iron. So it doesn't wipe off. It's actually quite difficult to get seasoning off a pan. You don't just scrape it off with a spatula. It's on the pan. So it's very durable. But what it doesn't like is water. So if you're camping and you leave it out and it gets rained on, which a friend of mine just did this, and their cast iron pan is totally rusted now because it was out all night in the rain, and the next morning it had started to get rusted.
Even though it was seasoned.
I don't think they had even seasoned it after they cooked. So seasoning comes with the pan. It's something that builds every time you cook with it. But when we talk about seasoning a pan, what we're talking about is a little bit of an extra step that helps to reinforce what's already there and to make sure that no acidic foods or anything have eaten it out, and that it stays nice and nonstick. So what I call a light seasoning, this is probably what your camp instructor was telling you to do. A light seasoning to me is when you take your pan, you wash it. Yes, you can use water. Yes, you can use dish detergent. Okay. And a lot of people are freaking out right now because grandma always said, don't use soap. The difference is we don't use lye-based soap today. We use dish detergent. It's a very different product. So the detergent like Dawn or Dove or whatever you use at the sink will be fine on your cast iron skillet. And so you put a little of that in it. You wash it out with a rag or a soft sponge, not metal, not one of the rough metal ones. And then you go ahead and clean out the food that's in there. So I made sausage Alfredo the other day. I'm not leaving that in the pan. That's got to go. So you wash it, clean it out, dry it with paper towels. Now, here's the trick. It's not going to be fully dry. The paper towels are not going to be able to remove all the water out of that very porous surface. So then you take the pan, you put it back on the stove for just a minute on a low heat, and the heat will cause the water to evaporate. So at that point, you have a clean, dry pan. I like to go ahead and do the light seasoning at that point because the washing removed any surface oils. So I'm not talking about the seasoning that's baked on, but surface oils come off that way. So I like to do a light seasoning. I put a little bit of oil in the pan. Olive oil's fine. You can pick your favorite. It doesn't matter. Olive oil in the pan. and I rub it around with paper towels and tongs so I don't hurt my fingers. I get it all on the inside of the pan, the inside walls. Make sure you get in, you know, the little corners of the pan, but the inside of the pan. And then make sure you remove all excess oil. And this is where most people go wrong. You think more is better, and it's not, because in order for it to adhere to the pan, it's got to be just a little bit too much, and it just becomes a sticky glob. So you wipe out everything that will wipe out, and what remains will form that seasoning. So you leave it on the stove for a couple minutes and let that heat up. It doesn't need to smoke. I actually consulted a chemist on this. It does not need to smoke. Just let it heat up for a couple minutes. And then when it's done, turn the heat off and let it sit there and cool down. If you still have any residue of that oil, wipe it out and then store it away somewhere where it can breathe. I put mine on a baker's rack. You can put a lid on it if you want, but it's nice to have like something in between the lid and the pan.
Yeah, so we'd always like roll up a little paper towel and like make a little, you know, and then set the lid on so there was a spacer.
Yeah. There you go. See, they knew what they were doing when they were telling you how to do that. That's the biggest fear, is leaving it outside and it getting wet, or that, you know, dew in the morning settles on it. You don't realize it. You get it home, and the next time you bring it out, it's a rust bucket.
Yeah, and then it's like, well, I guess I'll change my plans. I can't use that tonight, you know.
Yeah, I can't cook with this now. And it sounds like a lot. It honestly takes like 2 minutes. It only takes like 2 minutes. And I call that a light seasoning because it's on the stove. If you feel like your pan needs a little bit more TLC, or maybe you had, you know, some of that sticky oil on there and you really scrubbed that off, or you took that Brillo pad to it, you need to do a deeper seasoning. Same thing, clean it, dry it on the stove, put your oil on it, but you can put the oil on the outside too. And then you put it in the oven for an hour, and the temperature should be about 10 degrees lower than the smoke point of the oil you're using. So olive oil is like 350, so you would go like 340 in the oven. And that way it's not going to release any fumes in the air. It's just going to bake that on there, and you'll have a beautiful pan when it comes out. If you feel like it needs more, you can do 2 or 3 sessions of that.
And that's, I guess, what I meant by finicky. So it's not just like wash it, dry it, throw it in the cupboard. There's a little bit extra to do. But to your point, that's what I think it's obvious now, if you're not familiar with cast iron and you're here to talk about seasoning, we're not talking about salt and pepper. We're talking about the patina or the polymer of oil that builds up on the surface of the cast iron when you season it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not black paint. It's right. Not nonstick chemicals, you know, because you see, like if you see a black wood stove, that's
right,
painted.
Right.
You know, it's different, or it's polished. So it's funny how when you start looking around, you're like, wait a minute, is that seasoned? That's not seasoned, is it? So some things aren't seasoned, but the pans are. And so you shouldn't put any kind of oil or anything on your pan that you don't want to eat.
Yeah. And like you said, the great thing about most modern manufacturers is, I'm sure you can buy unseasoned pans, but like you said, like Lodge, just use that example, they're going to be seasoned off the shelf and you can take them home, give them a rinse, dry them out, use them, you're good to go.
Right. And the way you know is a completely unseasoned pan is totally silver. It is completely silver. And so that's, people used to have to buy it like that and season it at home, and then Lodge started seasoning them back in the 90s.
It almost looks like aluminum.
Yes, it does. Unseasoned ones. It's really interesting. Yes. Yeah. But today, these modern manufacturers, when you see them, those pans are oftentimes, they look gold or bronze or coppery. And they are cast iron, but they have certain oils that they're using, and they season it like once, and then it creates that beautiful color. And I mean, I have some here that no one can see, but like that's my new Stargazer.
Yes, has a very bronze look almost.
Yeah. And so I just think that's really cool. But folks should know that after you bring it home and you start using it, your seasoning will cover that,
that's
and
right,
your pan will turn dark and eventually will become black.
Well, this has been really fascinating. I know we could talk a lot more about cast iron, but I think this is a really good introduction. And I think both of your books especially the modern cast iron for people that just want a good background reference book. And again, skillet heads for the people that want to go a step deeper and start looking for their own pieces in other places and maybe start understanding what it takes to clean up a piece, restore a piece, mm-hmm. and things like that. So both books, really good. I really enjoyed Skillet Heads. Like I said, I've already mentioned that. So that's available what date?
May 2nd.
So yeah, it'll be out when this podcast episode comes out, I'm sure. And I'll put links in the show notes for all of this too, so people can find it easily. Ashley, where else can people find you online if you care to share? Do you have a blog or a website or anything like that?
Yeah. So my blog is bigsisterknows.com. And I share a lot about cast iron these days. And you can find all kind of neat things there, from recipes to links to the interviews that I did for the book. I tried to record all the interviews and make those available on YouTube. So you can really geek out with a few hours worth of cast iron if you want. So you can find those on YouTube. You can search for Ashley L. Jones, and it's my modern cast iron playlist. But again, you can link to those through my website at bigsisterknows.com. I'm on Facebook and Instagram. Look for Ashley L. Jones, author, and find me there. Connect with me. We're running some different promos and fun things going on. So lots of fun for our cast iron friends right now.
Good deal. Awesome. Well, it's a timeless topic. I'm glad you had some time to stop by and chat about it. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Roger. I appreciate it. This has been great. I hope everyone enjoys something in cast iron this week.
I think there's always nuggets of wisdom to gain, you know. And if you knew nothing about cast iron, you know a lot more now. But
you do now.
But otherwise, very good conversation. So we'll catch up with you soon. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Roger.
Hey, everybody, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Ashley Jones. As you can tell, she knows a lot about cast iron. She's passionate about the subject. Her new book, Skillet Heads, A Guide to Collecting and Restoring Cast Iron Cookware, out this week, at least the week that this episode drops. I will put links to the book, her blog, and a few other resources we mentioned in the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/227. So Ashley, thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy day to swing by and share some of your cast iron knowledge. That was absolutely fantastic. Also, folks, don't forget to head over to southernfood.org to find the Nitty Grits Network, which is a podcast network of shows on food, drink, and culture. The Kitchen Counter Podcast is part of that network as well, along with some other shows. If you like cooking and food and drink, I'm sure you'll find a show there that will pique your interest. So southernfood.org. You can send an email to me at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, I hope spring is treating you kindly and it's the weather is improving for you wherever you are. At least in the Northern Hemisphere, I guess it's spring. My Southern Hemisphere listeners are on the opposite side of the calendar, so to speak, and the weather is probably just starting to really cool down for them. But regardless, a change of season is a great time to rethink your plans for your cooking and your kitchen. New ingredients are becoming available seasonally. It's a good opportunity for us to stop, clean up our pantries, figure out what we're going to do in the kitchen in the coming months, and maybe get excited to cook some things that we haven't been able to get a hold of for months and months and months. I mentioned at the beginning, I'm excited. I was able to pick up some rhubarb at the Saturday market, so I'm excited to use that. I'm excited for the cherries and the berries and all the other good stuff that I know are just around the corner here in Oregon. So hopefully you too are getting excited about the new things to cook with that are coming into your local area. All right, everybody, that is going to do it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Thank you so much again for taking time out of your day to listen to the show, to welcome Ashley Jones into our family here and share some cast iron info. And I hope you're getting together with the ones you love, your family and friends, and cooking up some wonderful food. Until next time, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.